Hello, this is MusiCast. My name is CJ Cox, and this podcast is a production of the Foundation for New American Musicals, where our mission is to help educate, mentor, and showcase the next generations of creators of musicals on stage, screen, TV, and across all social media. Thank you for listening. On this episode, I'll be in the green room at Rockwell Table and Stage in Los Angeles as composers and performers are preparing for our bi-monthly showcase, Musicale. Here, composers have a chance to present numbers for new musicals. I'll be talking to composer Divya Mouse and her show, The Molly House, and we're going to hear a gorgeous number from that show. But first, I'm going to talk to one of the educators and several of the kids involved in one of the Foundation's cornerstone programs, Pathway. To create the Pathway program, the Foundation brought together some of the most innovative educators in the area to carve out a collaboration that offers students a full progressive route from high school to community college to university and beyond. Instrumental in the program is Dr. Ed Trimis, who is principal at a high school in the Southgate area of Los Angeles. He's been working with the Foundation to create one of the first high school curriculums in show writing in the country. Let's meet Dr. Trimis and some of his students.
We are from a school in Southgate, part of Los Angeles Unified School District. These are my students. My name is Dr. Trimis, and they are all students in a... writing for musical theater program. Some of them are in their second year. I guess they're all in your second year.
Yeah.
Two of these students.
The second year of the program?
Year of the program. They're okay. All juniors in high school, their third year. So Jessica and Maria were winners of Star Search last year in June. They won the high school division for their show, Grandma's Keeper.
I remember the show. It was lovely.
And they completed the first year of the Writing for Musical Theater program at our school, and now they're in their second year. And this production today, we're going to see a couple of songs from a show called Real Life, which they helped co-create along with students from our school and from Huntington Park High School years ago. The show chronicles the real-life stories of high school students, both in Huntington Park and in Southgate, based on their monologues. So original songs, original monologues, and we're going to hear a couple of songs tonight from that show.
That's great. Now, let's get a little background on this program. Now, how did this program start, and how long have you been?
So the Writing for Musical Theater program, I started a similar program at Verdugo Hills High School year before last. And last year, when I went to our school, Legacy Visual and Performing Arts High School, we started the Writing for Musical Theater program there. Last year, we did the first year. This year is the second year of the program. Our drama teacher is teaching the class this year, and we are doing an original musical this fall called Real Life. And this is really year three of the program. So the way our curriculum plan works is year one, they learn how to write musicals, they learn how to write songs, learn how to write book, script. Year two, they develop their 10-minute musicals into full-length musicals and intern on an original show in the fall. And then year three, they produce their original musical, full-length version. So yeah. Maria and Jessica will be producing their show, Grandma's Keeper, as a full-length musical in fall of 2018.
Okay. Now, I understand that this is the first high school curriculum in show writing in the country.
This is, I think we're one of the early starters.
Okay.
Like I said, we had a similar program at my other school, but my understanding is we are actually one of the only schools that has a full 2 to 3 year program in it. Some schools have started just with a 1 year program, but we actually have this planned out across 3 years.
Oh, okay. Well, let's meet some of the participants. Do you guys want to introduce yourselves and tell me a little bit about what are you each doing numbers tonight? Or what are you doing? Let's start with you.
Hi, I'm Maria Hernandez. Like Dr. Trimis said, I am the book writer for Grandma's Keeper, and I helped write the script and the music.
And that was one of the winners at this year's Show Search, right?
Yeah, it was.
Okay. And how did you find out about the Show Search program?
Dr. Trimis, he introduced it to us, and I didn't really know how to feel about it because I wasn't really interested in the musical program at first. But Jessica, my friend and my co-writer, she actually brought me into the class, and I ended up liking it, and it just led on from there.
And what about you, Jessica?
Wait. Well, I am, again, Jessica. I am co-writer for Grandma's Keeper. And, well, what led me to the class in a way was more of a friend kind of bringing me in. A friend, Oliver, here, kind of brought me in. I wanted to experience something new because, I mean, it's high school. Why not experience something new, something different? Get out of your comfort zone. And that's what I did. And I brought in Maria just because, you know, for the heck of it.
Okay, that's great. Now, what about you, Oliver? Is that...
Yeah.
And what have you been doing?
I've been working on my own musical separately. I didn't get to finish my last year and go on to the show search with Marie and Jessica, but I've been working on mine separately this year, so I can probably have it done for the next one.
That sounds really exciting. And what about you?
I am Abigail Rodriguez, and I am one of the actresses from Grandma's Keeper. This is my first time acting out something that someone originally wrote. I am currently in my first year in this musical program where I'm writing my own play, and I really wish the best with everyone.
So just if I can jump in, I'm very excited about the scope of the program because where we started with about 8 or 9 kids in the class last year, we have about 36 in the class now. And they're all going to be producing their own 10-minute musicals. Next year, Jessica and Maria will do a full-length musical based on Grandma's Keeper. And the following year, there'll be another couple that will do a full-length musical based on their show. So we are going to have full-length original musicals every fall. And that, I know, is not happening anywhere in the country. So we're really excited about that.
And these will be presented at your high school?
At the school.
Okay.
Yeah.
Now, if people want to find out more about this program that you're doing, or they want to see your work, how can they?
Probably the best thing is to start with our school website. It's vapalegacy.com. And on the school website, we can have information about their upcoming shows and that information about the class. Social media links are also on the website. They can go to our social media sites, and they can get more information that way. That's probably the best way.
Okay. And what do all of you, do you guys have plans for or goals for what you'd like to do next? Like after high school, do you plan on continuing writing music?
Well, as for me, I actually want to be an immigration lawyer, and I know that I want to major in lawyering, but as many people told me, they say that if I do have a passion for writing in music and playwriting, that I should still continue it, and I am thinking about doing it as a minor.
Okay, and what about you?
Well, I honestly don't know yet, but I'm sure I'll figure it out, but writing music is actually something fun. It's very difficult at times, but, you know, it's a process, and you need to get through it, and I honestly would continue it, probably focusing a lot that I want to focus in theater in general, so I really hope I continue in this.
Did you have a lot of... I mean, how many of you had theater backgrounds or had been in... Had you performed in plays before?
School plays count.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
I was in a commercial.
Oh?
When I was a baby.
Okay. And what about you, Oliver?
When I was younger in elementary, my fifth grade teacher, he would come and make movies. So, like, one time we did The Hunger Games. We did, like, a little movie, and I was Gail in it. And I had done theater since fifth grade for a while, and I was also in, like, dancing, and so I've done a couple things.
And what would you like to do? You know what you'd like to do after this? Would you continue writing musicals?
Yeah, like on my own time. Like, I honestly just want to be an animator, and if I do end up getting the chance, I would want to animate my own musical that I'm currently working on because I would want to see it in motion.
Okay, tell us about that musical. What is that?
Well, it's called Abandoned Love, and it's about these two orphans, and basically they find each other in the orphanage, and they fall in love, and then they find out that they end up liking each other, so they move in together when they're 18, and then later on they end up becoming a couple, and then towards the end, the male decides to go and propose to the female, and when he's on his way, he gets in a car crash and dies.
Wow. And now, what's do you look at expanding this program?
Yeah, I think as I can see it growing, one of the things we're doing at the school is we are going to be starting a magnet on the campus, a musical theater magnet. And so I think as part of the musical theater magnet, it will be a natural extension of this program. We're going to have classes in directing, classes in producing, classes in lawyering, as Taya said, for musical theater, and that's going to be a natural extension of the program.
And will that expand from your high school, you're saying, nationally?
Yeah, I mean, I think there are, in the school district, there are more schools that are offering this kind of a program. And so as one of the early starters, we would definitely be a resource for those schools. They're going to, I think, use some of our materials, our syllabus, and that kind of thing as they pattern their new programs.
How difficult has this been maintaining this program? We always talk about, we always hear about cuts to the arts, programs like that. And how have you been able to maintain this?
Well, I'm glad you asked that question, because that question does come up. As a school principal, I'm very aware of budgets and restrictions. And I think if you have something that's quality, something that's good, savvy principals are able to find funds to make it work. We really started our program on a shoestring. It was volunteer. I worked with the students on a volunteer basis after school, and we were able to build interest to have the class as one of our regular drama classes, you know, this year. And so I think, like I said, if something is important, something matters, you find money for it. And that said, you are trying to be as thrifty as you can along the way. And then that's really important to make it work. Because if you were going to go in and spend a lot of money, it's going to be hard to justify it. But it doesn't cost a lot of money. Something like this, it's really the students are generating their own material. Students are learning how to write, music, and it doesn't take a lot of resources.
They're also the set designers.
Okay.
That too.
So someone just mentioned that they are also set designers. So did you find there was resistance to when you started this program, or how difficult was it to get it going?
Resistance, I don't think so. I think the only challenge, again, was time. This is why my MO as a school principal is to model, to pilot programs, and then to hand those programs over to other people that have more time than I do. Because that is probably my biggest, my most challenged resource is my time. And so I was able to squeeze it in, and you can talk to the girls, but it was quite a bit of, can you come now? Can you go? How about now? How about now? And we're always trying to find the time to meet. We tried after school, we tried before school, we tried at lunch, we tried during class, during their electives. And so that was the biggest challenge. Now, with the teacher having it as a regular class, it's much easier because they have the class all week long, and it's just easier to find the time now with it.
So if other schools out there, other administrators, other teachers are interested in trying to start similar programs, could they get in touch with you?
Yeah, absolutely. We actually presented a session at the California Educational Theater Association conference in North Hollywood on Saturday. And Maria, Jessica, and Abby were all there. And we presented a session on how to set up a writing for musical theater class for about 30 drama teachers at the conference. And that was great. So we actually gave out a lot of materials, a lot of information, and certainly anyone can contact me and I would share everything we've been doing with them. We have our 3-year plan, we have a syllabi, we have sample lesson plans, we have all of that, and they just have to get a hold of me at school.
Okay, do you want to give us the information?
Sure, they can contact me through our website, vapalegacy.com. They could also contact me through my email, which is etrimis@lausd.net. Either way, and we can share materials with them that way.
Excellent. Well, thank you so much for being with us, and I look forward to hearing your selections tonight.
Great. Thank you.
Thanks.
You can find more about the Pathway Program at the Foundation's website at fnam.us. Next, I'm going to talk to Divya Mouse, who is the composer for the Molly House prior to her presentation of several numbers at Musicale. Let's meet Divya.
My name is Divya Mouse. I'm the composer of The Molly House, a musical written with my collaborator, Richard Hansen, who wrote the book and the lyrics.
And Richard, he couldn't be with us this evening.
He lives in New York.
Because
I live in LA.
He lives in New York. Now, okay, that's interesting. How do you guys manage to work that out with a long-distance partnership?
Well, we wrote the musical as our thesis project while attending the Graduate Musical Theater Writing Program at NYU Tisch. And since graduating, we've had a few opportunities to get into the same space. We were residents at the Catskill Institute for their artist residency programs. So we were there for about 2 weeks working on rewrites. And I've flown out to New York a few times to do sort of a reading here and there. And then this past spring, actually, NYU chose our show to do a full production with their, as a collaboration production between the different programs, and used it as their senior showcase and a big spring production for Tisch. And I was out there for 7 weeks.
Okay. Now, is this something that they usually do, or is
they, it's more recent. I think they've done a few of them so far, maybe just one actually, but it kind of depends always on, I think, it's a newer collaboration program, certainly, and they've done a lot of summer collaborations that have been workshops or readings, and I think this was the second full production that they did. And I think it also depends on their donors, you know, whether they have the funds coming in that can make a production like that happen. It was certainly, we were very lucky because it was one of the biggest productions they'd done in a few years, I think.
And how was that for you? And I guess let's back up a little bit. This was a full production that they did of The Molly House, the show that you
The Molly House.
Presenting tonight?
Yes. Richard and I have written some standalone songs together, but that is our only full-length show together.
And tell me about the show, because it sounds really interesting, and I'm curious about the genesis of it.
So when we found out we would be partners for our thesis project,
was this something that you chose, or were you paired?
The way the program works is that you write, you meet with most of the people who do the opposite thing that you do, and you come up with ideas for what you could work on together in the second year, and kind of rank people in terms of how much you want to work together, and the professors do their best to give you someone in your top choices.
Okay.
So we had already decided.
Although I'm thinking opposite of what you do, like they pair you with somebody from dentistry.
it's composers and words people, they call them. Okay. So I was a composer in the program, and Richard was a book writer lyricist. And even before we were assigned together, we had already talked about collaborating anyway, and something that we were both, I kind of had an idea about, but he was definitely immediately passionate about, is that we wanted to tell a gay love story that felt like an epic romance that was deeply serious, because a lot of the gay couples or gay romance that we see nowadays seems to either be comedic, or the side characters, not the main characters, mm-hmm. or if they are featured as main characters in a serious piece, often it belongs in a very sort of niche artistic part of whatever genre it is in. You know, either if it's an independent film, mm-hmm. or, you know, a sort of more avant-garde piece of theater or something. So our goal was, let's write a love story that is sweeping and epic and in the vein of an old traditional musical, such as West Side Story, with a big cast and all of the sort of traditional structures of musical theater, but let's make it a gay love story.
Okay. And so tell me about, give us a pitch for the idea behind Molly House.
So The Molly House is based on true events, actually. It's about a gay underground bar in 1720s London run by a woman, Maggie Clapp. And it was this time period in British history where the persecution of gay men was just the highest that it had been at any point in various centuries. Gay men were being pilloried or hanged every week. And as a response to that, or perhaps they already existed, but it certainly became more evident, these gay bars and cafes sprung up as havens, safe havens for the gay community.
And remind me, you say it's in the 1780s?
It's 1726.
Oh, so it's
1726,
even earlier.
Wow. Yeah. And so one of the actual characters in history is Mark Partridge, who was a patron of this gay bar. He was one of the gay patrons. And he was outed to the police, and the police blackmailed him, caught him and blackmailed him and said, you can either help us by leading undercover cops into this bar so that we can do a raid on the busiest night and just arrest all of these people, or we will imprison you and hang you for being gay. So we took that part of history, that pressure that was put on him, because that was very intriguing to us, and we have him falling in love with the character that we invented, who works in the Molly House as like a barkeep. And so they have this love story, and our main man, Mark, he is stuck in this struggle of whether to save his own life or to betray his community and the man he has fallen in love with.
Wow, it sounds fascinating.
Yeah, and then there's other characters that sort of, Maggie is one of the other main characters because she's sort of the mother Madonna of this Molly House. And then there's a fourth character.
And these are based on true characters.
She was a true character as well. And then we've invented another character, Josephine, who is a young teenager of the upper class who happens to be related to Adam, and she follows him down into the slums to the Molly House and discovers this world there that she's never imagined before that feels more like home to her than her own house. Mm-hmm. And then with Adam's help, actually, she finds and discovers a part of herself she never knew before and invents this new persona called Finnick, who is this blacksmith apprentice and a boy.
So the character, would you consider the character transsexual?
Well, we've kind of left it a little bit vague because yes, Josephine could be transgender, a man, Finnick, mm-hmm. but both because that term didn't exist back then,
right.
and because I think we're not sure. It seems like Finnick is maybe more sort of gender fluid because Finnick is, at least the last actress we worked with interpreted Finnick as a character very much as a tomboy.
And at the same time,
dressing in boyish ways, but not necessarily completely identifying as a man. So.
Okay. Because at the same time, this would have given the Finnick character opportunities that this female character wouldn't have.
Certainly.
Been able
yeah.
to enjoy.
There's a lot of freedom that comes with that storyline. But again, we didn't pull that out of thin air. We were actually looking into that century and what the LGBTQ mm-hmm. history in England was at the time. And there were accounts of women who were, for all intents and purposes, men in society, and sometimes were found out and sometimes weren't. There was one woman who was a professor at a university and had a male name and was, you know, we know very little of what the terminology and the expression right. was at the time because it was just not talked about at the time.
Exactly.
We can only guess.
Yes,
you know,
the terms gender fluid and different pronouns were not.
Yeah, yeah, it's not like they back then were saying, "Oh, I'm not a man; I'm just Butch" or
right,
something. You
right.
know. So,
how did you do your research on this, and how did you come upon these topics?
We most of our information actually came from the court trial transcripts of the trials that happened when this big raid happened. And then they also had pamphlets that they were handing out. There was this Society for the Reformation of Manners that sort of tasked itself with the purification of London, and they printed pamphlets.
Was it from a moral outrage kind
yes,
of perspective?
Yes, exactly, and it was quoting the undercover cops who were, you know, talking about this sort of outrageous acts taking place in the Molly House and how men were dressing in women's clothing and prancing about and kissing each other and dancing and sort of, you know, engaging in all of this very scandalous revelry. And that's what those pamphlets are about. So actually one of the major scenes in the show is this huge marriage extravaganza, which is partly this pageantry, but then also is an actual wedding between two people. And most of our information about what that ceremony was like in the Molly House came from one of the pamphlets. There's like a birthing ceremony, and they would like give birth to these dolls and then put on veils and get married in this very ostentatious way. And we just found that so delightful.
It sounds amazing. Now, how do you approach writing, say, taking actual events or, say, these pamphlets, and how do you approach translating that into music?
So musically, I approached the conceit of the score as the outside world. There was actually a very interesting thing happening in the musical world at that time anyway, because we were transitioning from Baroque to classical music. So there's a little bit of a break happening in the music history there anyway. So And I was raised on Baroque and classical music, playing string instruments, so I have a deep love for those genres anyway. So I kind of blended the two and did my own a little bit strange interpretation of them to represent the outside world, just of upper class London, of the upper society that sort of oppresses the rest. And then the sound of the Molly House and our main characters is all modern music, but specifically music that I think has a tradition of rebellion, freedom, sexual liberation. So it's a lot of classic rock, which London in and of itself has a great history with,
right.
R&B, soul, and folk music for Adam, who's an Irish character. And
that you see those genres of music sort of coming out of cultures of oppression or cultures that have been oppressed.
Yeah, but also as just the sounds of liberation, mm-hmm. sexually and culturally and class-wise. So by all means, the score is not, you know, a modern score in the sense of like electronic and alt indie, whatever music, which, you know, other modern scores are. I definitely picked certain genres that are many decades older, but I still consider pop music.
Okay. Now, you said that you started as a musician, that you're training. What is your background? Give us
my
a little
background
bit of information as to how you came to this.
Yeah, so I was never a musical theater kid. I did grow up on the musical theater films, the big musical films, mm-hmm. but I was first sort of brought up classically, and then I transitioned into jazz in high school, and then did my undergrad in pop music songwriting, because at that point I was all about the songwriting, but realized that I studied at USC, and I realized actually I have so many interests in dramatic storytelling, and I wanted to explore all these other genres, and it's kind of difficult in pop music to justify using some of that other stuff.
I guess that there are limitations to, say, a pop song.
Yeah, and it's. I mean, pop music is about pushing the boundaries and moving forward in music, mm-hmm. and I would rather tell stories in using whatever tools I already love. I don't know if I'm necessarily the musician who wants to, like, invent the next electronic okay. instrument that, you know. So, but mostly it was about the storytelling. I really wanted to write music for the sake of telling a story. I wanted the music to be a tool, not a means, not the ends.
Okay, we will, we're going to circle back to the Molly House in just a minute, but are there other projects that you're working on?
Yeah, actually. Well, I try, but I've kind of become consumed by the show because in the time of 2 years, which was my year in grad school writing it and then my year out of grad school so far, it's just like taken up all of my time. But I am working on my second album whenever I have time to do so. And I am
your second album. So,
yeah, so I have a debut album called Bigger, which was just sort of a collage of all of the different genres and styles I had written in so far, sort of music selections out of all of those. And my second album, I'm focusing more on multi-vocal, sort of traditional song forms, like old American songwriters song form with strains of jazz in it, but all multi-vocal, because that's kind of my preferred. It's something that I wanted to explore more. So there's that, the second album, and then I'm really wanting to make a movie pitch, an animated movie musical pitch.
Okay, it sounds like you definitely have a lot on your plate. And now, how far along are you on the second album?
Oh, I have about 4 or 5 songs written. I just recently decided to scrap one of them because I think the time had passed for that one. So I'm aiming to write about 10 and then scratch a few of them depending on how it all fits together.
And how do you approach writing music for yourself, writing music for an album, as opposed to a collaborative effort writing music for a musical?
I think it's usually because all of those songs are standalone songs. They're not in the context of a story. It always is, to me, the conceit of the song. What is the context, the situation that is intriguing to me? For example, I often write with Daniel Wideline, who is a producer, a pop musician in LA. And And we wrote a song for an artist, Luke Edgemon, and the song is called Don't Try to Make Me Feel Better. And the whole idea behind that song was when you're with someone who is depressed, has depression, or is just not feeling good for whatever reason, the idea that you, as a partner, what is your role? How do you make that person feel better? And there are a lot of people who struggle with that idea because it's not about making that person feel better. There's nothing you can do to change the way they feel. All you can do is try to be there for them and support them until hopefully the mood passes. So
right.
We just logged onto that idea and then wrote the song. We also just wrote a Christmas song together, actually, that we're hoping to get performed. That will actually be performed in New York at the Lincoln Center.
Wow.
In the Bruno Walter Auditorium. It's a concert organized by John Snedarsik. And he asked me to write a holiday song for that concert. So Daniel and I just wrote one together. And the whole concept of that one is, I don't like green. I don't like red. this Christmas, can I wear you instead? It's okay. Like a sexy Christmas song that's kind of cheeky. And
all right. That's fun.
Yeah.
That's fun. Let's go back just briefly. Well, not briefly, but let's go back to the Molly House mm-hmm. a little bit because we want to play a song. And let's talk about the song specifically a little bit. The song that I'm thinking of is Sewn Into You. Mm-hmm. Is that,
yeah.
I've got the title right?
Yes.
Okay. Tell me, give us a little bit of background for this song.
So this song is between the two main characters, Adam and Mark. And Adam is kind of the light of the show. He's come into this world having been rejected from Ireland. He was thrown out by his family and by his business partner, and he comes to London trying to find a new home.
Is that because of his sexuality?
Because of his sexuality. He was outed, and kind of the community threw him out. And so he finds a new home in London, and he's so optimistic, and he meets Mark, who is this sort of protector, bouncer in the Molly House, who we know is, mm-hmm. you know, in this tricky situation with the police. And Adam is so intrigued by him right away and kind of tries to draw him in and sort of making advances on him. And Mark is always sort of withholding a little bit. And then finally, the pressure becomes too much for Mark because he can't fight. He's so already so overwhelmed by being constantly sort of brutalized by the police who are putting pressure on him to betray everyone and his own feelings for Adam because he too is sort of falling in love with him. And then finally at the end of Act One, Mark kind of can't resist anymore and he falls into this moment. It was actually music first. We did it music first. Quite a few of the songs were music first actually and... Yeah, I don't know if you want to hear more about
I'm curious about that because I think people are interested in kind of the process of creating music specific for musicals, whether it's music first. I mean, every composing team seems to work differently, but I am interested in that.
So in this moment, I don't remember why we chose to do this music first, but I remember thinking, what is the feeling when you're in love with someone, but you're so unsure still, that feeling of your stomach dropping out. So I was like, I need this chord that is on the lower end of the piano. Because there are a lot of ballads that have sort of high, vulnerable, lilting melodies in the right hand, and that just didn't feel right for this moment. And so I thought, what is the feeling and the sound of your stomach dropping out through your feet? And that is exactly what the intro to this song is just your stomach dropping.
That's such a great image and such a powerful feeling. Do you often find yourself writing with, starting with an image or a feeling like that?
Yeah, absolutely. The first song of the show, I immediately thought, that one was lyric first, but I was thinking of what I wanted the groove to be, and I immediately thought it has to be the sound of this sort of hopeful energy that has enough sort of obstinacy that it's going to power through anything. So I thought, okay, acoustic guitar going dun 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 dun, and that's how that whole feel came first of all. Mm-hmm. And then I got into, okay, it's going to be a lot of open fifths, and it's just going to be this sort of powerful but slightly possibly even unstable sound because it's just bulldozing through.
Right.
So that's how I approach it a lot of times. Sort of, what is the gutsy feeling that powers it, and then what does that sound like?
Okay, and specific to, so then with this ballad that we're going to listen to, then the lyrics came after?
Yes, and the lyrics play on, Richard was playing on the fact that Adam is a former tailor's apprentice. That is the job that he lost in Ireland.
I was wondering about that.
And a lot of his interactions with the other, at least with Josephine / Finnick and Mark, are about mending their clothes or creating clothes for them. Finnick's first suit, when he kind of explodes into his new persona in Act 2, Adam makes him a gentleman's suit. Or Mark, when he's in a very sort of stressed situation, Adam takes the lining out of his coat and says, sell this, it's going to make you a lot of money, it's a very precious lining. So he has these interactions that are based on his tailoring, and he's the one who starts the song. So the hook is very much Adam's hook. To be sewn into him.
That sounds great. Let's listen to that. I'm a sucker for a ballad, so I just think this is a really beautiful song. And tell us a little bit more about some of the other songs from the other music from the show, because you mentioned that you mix styles and genres.
Yes. So for Maggie, we always pictured someone who had to be sort of very physically owning the space on stage in a way that none of the other characters do, because she is the owner of the Molly House. Without her, none of this would exist. So for her, I was just like classic rock all of the way. I'm a big Deep Purple fan who British classic rock band. So I was very much inspired by that tradition for her. Then for Adam, we went more in a sort of folk pop direction, which just felt interesting to me.
Okay.
And then Mark is more, because he has there's a lot of danger around his character, and he's in a lot of ways stuck in his past. So he's more of a sort of jazz pop.
Okay.
I always think of him as sort of a Harry Connick Jr., but more sympathetic.
Okay. Now, what's happening with the show? So you said that you have now you spent 7 weeks rehearsing this and everything. So the show is complete.
So we did the production, the full production, and had a week-long run-in in New York in the spring, and now the next thing we're gearing up to do is a full concert of the score in January here at Rockwell. That'll be on Sunday, January 14th.
Okay.
And the purpose of that is very much that, both we want to follow up in a lot of the interest that we got from the production, but also we just want to present the score in a setting where we can really focus on the music fully, and then we're going to capture that on video and sort of...
Okay. Yeah. And do you have plans for... Are there other productions?
Love to have more productions, okay. I think.
So if people want to find out more about this particular show, do you guys have...
We have a website. It's www.mollyhousemusical.com, I think.
Okay.
I can't remember if it's the Molly House Musical, or I think it's just
We can find out about that and put it in the
And there's a Facebook page. And the Facebook page, just if you look up the Molly House, all one word, it will have updates, events, demos that are coming out. We're always putting out new demos, and all of those things are always put on Facebook. So if you want those news updates, that's the way to go.
Okay. And you. So if people want to find out more about you and the upcoming album.
Yes, my website is diviamaus.com. Very easy, DIVYAMAUS. And I also have a Facebook artist page where I'm always putting out news and new recordings and things like that.
Okay, that sounds great. We will definitely listen to some of those. Yeah. So thank you so much for talking to us.
Thank you for having me.
I am really looking forward to hearing more of the music.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you. If you'd like to find out more about Divya or hear music from her album Bigger, you can go to diviamaus.com. That's DIVYAMAUS.com. Or if you'd like to hear more music from the Molly House, go to www.mollyhousemusical.com. I want to thank Divya and Dr. Trimis and his students for joining me, and I want to thank you for listening. I hope you'll subscribe to our podcast so you can be updated as we add new episodes. You can do this by scrolling down to the MusicCast section on the Foundation website at fnam.us. While you're there, you can also join our mailing list so you can be informed about upcoming MusicAL showcases or other events such as the January launch of Third Mondays. This is going to be an up-close and personal experience with musical theater legends and exciting emerging artists at the renowned supper club Sterling's Upstairs at the Federal in North Hollywood. Third Mondays will premiere January 15th, 2018. It's going to be a great evening of live music, and I really hope you'll join us. I also hope you'll consider clicking the donate button on our website. Your tax-deductible donations will go towards ensuring that programs like Pathway continue to support, educate, and encourage the kids we talked to earlier. Anything you can contribute will be greatly appreciated. I also appreciate you joining us for this episode of MusicCast, and hope you'll join us next time. Thanks for listening.